Summit or no summit, when it comes to North Korea, the need for reliable data remains paramount. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton looks into how open source data and satellite imaging keep analysts in the know. And that conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. As always, as we record this, the summit between the leaders of the United States and the Democratic People's Republic of Korea is still on. The expectations for the summit have been drastically reduced and even in doubt at times in recent days and weeks. But that does not diminish the outstanding need for continued, solid, reliable, and accurate data about North Korea. So, how do analysts pull together these files about such a secretive regime? Who better to ask than one of those military defense analysts?
But increasingly, the cost of satellite imagery is coming down. Mm. The types of satellite imagery is changing. And so people like me in academia or even just hobbyists can get involved and do some of this work that used to only be available to intelligence groups.
From satellite imagery to 3D renderings and all sorts of content, you have to have reputable and robust technology. Here we go.
Melissa Hannum, and I'm a senior research associate at the Middlebury Institute in Monterey, California.
Melissa, thank you for your time. We reached out to you because of a recent article you wrote, among many, called A Few Morning Thoughts on U.S.-North Korea Relations. And in there, you reference maps and imagery. Can you tell us how you collect the data when you're doing an analysis on something so, I don't know, murky as the Korean Peninsula?
There's definitely a revolution happening in open source information. And so a lot of people ask me, what is open source information? And that's essentially anything that is not classified. And when you look at a nuclear weapons program like North Korea's, it used to be that only countries like the United States, the Soviet Union, could use things like satellite images, that could use data visualization and analysis tools. But increasingly, the cost of satellite imagery is coming down. Mm. The types of satellite imagery is changing. And so people like me in academia or even just hobbyists can get involved and do some of this work that used to only be available to intelligence groups.
That's kind of fascinating. In the article that I'm looking at, you do mention something that recently happened, and that was the North Korean administration or regime asked journalists to come in and witness the collapsing of one of the test sites. Is that something that would show up on imagery?
Absolutely. So, you know, North Korea is a very secretive and private place, and they have a number of nuclear facilities throughout the country. One of their facilities is called Punggye-ri, and that's where they conduct the actual underground explosions, the nuclear tests. And the reason you do that is because you want to make sure that your explosive device or eventually warhead actually works. And so the facility is based in a valley, and it's surrounded by some pretty big mountains all around it. And they tunnel into the side of the mountains, and at the end of those tunnels, they explode different devices. And so they've had testing since 2006 in that mountain, and just a few weeks ago, they invited international journalists to come in and witness them, quote-unquote, dismantling the test site. And so the way they did it is that, you know, these journalists took a really bumpy bus ride all the way from Wonsan in to see the facility, and they set up, you know, the journalists could definitely see that they set up explosive charges at the mouths of each of the tunnels, mm-hmm. and that they set them up in the sort of buildings and what were purportedly monitoring stations around there, and it set off a huge explosion, and that makes for very interesting B-roll.
Right.
It makes for some amazing photographs, but whether it actually dismantled their nuclear test site, that is hard to tell from the ground. So one of the things we're doing now is looking at satellite imagery to see if we can see any big difference. We use satellite imagery from a company called Planet based in San Francisco, and they make these small sats. These small sats are plentiful, and so they have, I think, well over 200 of them orbiting right now. And it means that you can take images of the Earth much more frequently than traditional satellites. And so where it used to be, I'd have to wait 2 weeks or so to see an image of this place in North Korea. Planet's got an image basically every day, depending on how cloudy it is. planet came out with satellite imagery before and after, and you can see that the buildings are destroyed. You can see like dark spots around the entrances to the tunnels, but we still don't know how far back the tunnels are collapsed. Like, did they just collapse the entrances, or right. did they collapse the whole tunnel? Could they dig it out fast? Or so those are some of the questions that are lingering. And that's why we use other types of remote sensing data. Mm-hmm. So in addition to satellites that use sunlight to show us an optical image, you can use radar. And so that's what we call an active sensor. And you can bounce it off the surface of an object, and then it gets collected by the sensor again, and it gives you a shape of the ground. And so we're actually working with a company called TerraSAR-X based in Germany. It's owned by Airbus. And after the September nuclear test, the shift of the mountain was so strong that we actually saw a really big difference in the surface of the mountain. And so we're going to go through and see if there's anything worth seeing. It's, you know, a nuclear explosion is much larger than the chemical explosives you would use to collapse a tunnel. So we're not sure yet if we'll see anything.
Very interesting. I mean, that's such a panoply of technology you get to choose from now. And it's better foreign policy, better safety through technology in some ways, too. Melissa, can I pull back a little bit? I want to ask you something a little more macro. And it's just because I've been giving this some thought, too. As we record, we are still expecting the summit in Singapore between Kim Jong-un and President Trump on June the 12th. That the expectations for that have been lowered a lot, but it still seems to be on. And one of the reasons it got lowered was because Libya was mentioned in the conversation, and obviously that didn't work out well for the dictator there. I've always held the belief that North Korea would rather be treated like Pakistan, nuclear capable but left alone. Is that too simplistic of an analysis?
No, I think you're dead on. I mean, North Korea spent decades getting the technology to test these explosive devices. They've tested at least two different types of explosive devices. They've tested two different types of ICBMs, which are intercontinental ballistic missiles. They've tested an intermediate range missiles that could hit Guam, and they have plenty of short range missiles, all of which are theoretically nuclear capable. And so to ask them today, you know, or June 12th, I suppose, to dismantle that entire program is a big ask. And the North Koreans themselves have said in their state media that they're not going to do it. They have a different definition of denuclearization than the Trump administration. So for people who are business-minded and watching stock markets, it's likely that there will be fluctuations around what North Korea decides. But I, as a policy expert, I don't think there should be. That's not to say that there won't be because people feel nervous about it. But the meeting itself, if it happens or it doesn't happen, and who knows at this point, I mean, it's on, but a few days ago it was off. So we'll see. But the bar for the meeting is extremely low. There is very little that is expected to be accomplished from that meeting. So really, whether it happens or it doesn't happen, I don't think will affect nuclear security in the region broadly. I think if it does happen, it will be a good thing, but it is going to be one small step on a really long journey because North Korea doesn't plan on giving up its nuclear weapons. It would indeed like to be like Pakistan and just have its nuclear deterrent be a recognized nuclear power in the world and have the benefit of foreign investment.
Melissa, my last quick question in this, because of the Pakistan we were talking about, was there ever an official connection between AQCON and the sharing of nuclear technology with DPRK?
Yes, AQCON definitely had ties to DPRK along, you know, so the enrichment. We don't have a lot of information on North Korea's official design yet, but it does look a little bit different than Pakistani images, the very few Pakistani images we have. But yes, Libya, Pakistan definitely have that link. And There are letters documenting the exchange of goods and services between North Korea and AQCON, but they haven't been, I guess, authenticated in a way that is 100% bulletproof, but it's basically openly understood that there was cooperation.
Okay. Melissa, great work, and I hope we can circle back in a few months, and maybe after we digest, if this meeting does happen, we could talk again.
Sure, no problem.
That was Melissa Hannum. She's a senior research associate at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies, as well as the Mixed Methods Evaluation Training and Analysis Lab, also known as META, of the Middlebury Institute in Monterey, California. She is an expert on weapons of mass destruction and the use of open source data to assess WMD capabilities and verify treaties. Melissa Hannum also writes for DefenseOne.com. If foreign policy and military policy are your jam, then I highly recommend DefenseOne.com. There's a link to it and to Melissa Hannum's work in the show notes for this week. It's at KGORadio.com, and we also post a link at Facebook.com/TechonomicsRadio. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please stick around.